Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
And then there were two. A second Walmart in the Canadian province of Quebec has seen a majority of employees signing union cards indicating they wish to be represented by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The Saint-Hyacinthe store joins a store in Jonquière, Quebec, as the only two unionized Walmarts in the world. Under a ruling by the Quebec Labor Relations Board, both stores were automatically certified because a majority of employees wanted representation. Walmart representatives called the ruling undemocratic because a secret ballot wasn't required and employees may have been intimidated into signing.
The Service Employees International Union is fighting efforts by the state of Wisconsin to create tax credits for individual health insurance savings accounts. SEIU Wisconsin Political Director Robert Craig says the union opposes them because they'll seriously undermine good employer-provided health insurance for workers.
What they're designed to do is to completely change the health insurance landscape in this country. In order to have the account be tax-deductible, it has to be connected to a insurance plan, either a family plan or an individual plan with a high deductible, $1,000 to $2,000. And so your employer would have to provide that, and therefore it literally encourages the creation of very high deductible health insurance plans.
Congress has already created federal tax credits for these health savings accounts, and now a seemingly organized campaign by conservatives is underway to do the same at the state level.
I think what they really are is they're an attempt to roll back the post-World War II compact that a good job included employer-based health insurance.
Craig says real health care reform that addresses the high costs and provides universal coverage for workers is what's really needed.
The city of Denver has seen union membership jump by 50% over the last year. Much of the increase has been attributed to the Teamsters, who launched a massive organizing campaign of non-uniformed municipal employees in 2004. The increase could give the city's unions the leverage they need to put collective bargaining on Denver's ballot. Non-uniformed workers are also represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, as well as the Colorado Federation of Public Employees. The unions say that collective bargaining will give employees more say in their fate when it comes to benefits and pay. Critics say it will constrain the ability of the city to balance the budget by taking power away from policymakers.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency temp and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Time to take another peek into the lifestyles of the rich and cranky. Today's feature, blue jeans. Even the rich like to dress down every now and then, and slipping into a comfy pair of jeans is perfect for puttering around the mansion or driving your Hummer out to pick up some truffles at the gourmet market. But alas, you're rich, and your social class requires that you meet certain standards of attire, so you can't just throw on a pair of common old Levi's like I wear. Sure, you could upgrade to a pair of $150 designer jeans, but, well, they just don't have the panache that a person of your standing demands. Luckily, though, Calvin Stewart has stepped forward with just the jeans for you. The New York-based fashion designer has introduced an exclusive line that he calls APO Jeans. Each pair is made to order, matching a customer's specific measurements, waist, rump, thighs, ankles, and so forth. But that's just the start. APOs are made from a special denim costing $40 a yard, some 20 times the cost of the denim worn by us commoners. Still, denim is denim. What really sets your jeans apart is that Stewart will fully customize them for you, embellishing them with rivets and buttons made of gold, platinum, or other precious metals. We wanted to be the Mercedes-Benz of the denim industry, says Stewart. And so he is, complete with a price tag that starts at $1,000 a pair. To really strut your stuff, however, you might want to pay more than $4,000 a pair and get the ones that have a dozen sparkling diamonds embedded in the front button. You'll also be reassured to know that, in case anyone questions whether your jeans are truly special, Stewart provides a certificate of authenticity, an appraisal, and a born-on date for each pair of APOs. This is Jim Hightower saying, I wonder, can you just toss these things in the washer-dryer? Or do you have to take them to a Mercedes dealer for detailing?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Welcome, Tom Hartman here with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Today, the robber barons are having a party. Let's bring tea. In fact, let's bring tea every day for the next 4 years. Yeah, it's time for a tea party. What an idea. Actually, we're going to get into that a little more today. There are quite a few interesting things happening. Of course, the inauguration is happening as we speak. And, well, what can you say? Well, we'll get to that. What's going on with that? Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson, perhaps apropos to the most expensive inaugural in the history of the United States. Perhaps it should be called a coronation rather than an inauguration. It's harkens back to the days of kings and placing the crown on the head of the... Anyhow, here's Thomas Jefferson's our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson, a letter he wrote to Colonel Edward Carrington on January 16, 1787. He said, "Experience declares that man is the only animal which devours his own kind, for I can apply no milder term to the general prey of the rich upon the poor." Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States, author of the Declaration of Independence, and radical liberal. Actually, in some ways, he was a radical conservative as well. It's very interesting, but that's a whole other discussion. But definitely the roots of liberalism, and the founder of the Democratic Party, of today's Democratic Party, the oldest and longest-lasting political party in the history of the world. Well, you remember a few weeks ago, since today is Inauguration Day, it's the consequence of an election. And that election was decided largely by two states, Florida and Ohio. And interesting, in the recount in Florida, there was a recount done in a few small counties by one of the Florida newspapers. I believe it was the Orlando Sentinel. I may be wrong. And they said, well, this shows that there's no problem. The recount, however, did show that Kerry got a few more votes than Bush did in the recount. And in fact, according to several statisticians who have been talking about this quite a bit lately, if you were to apply that same shift that the recount found in those few counties to every county in Florida, then Kerry would have taken Florida. But that's not, the recount hasn't been done, so you can't make that demonstration or that claim. In Ohio, however, there was some real serious questions being asked, which led Barbara Boxer, God bless her, to lead a revolt, a Tea Party, speaking of Tea Parties, to lead a Tea Party revolt in the United States Senate. The United States Senate, of course, where the electoral votes, well, it's a combined session of the House and Senate, where the electoral votes were opened and read, and you had to have one member of Congress and one member of the Senate. And Stephanie Tubbs Jones came out and was the member of the House of Representatives who objected to the electoral vote. And Barbara Boxer was the senator. And this led to a remarkable, absolutely a remarkable two-hour, what was somewhere between a food fight and a investigative reporting scandal outing. I don't know, I'm not quite sure how to characterize it, in both the Senate and the House, where all of these horrific stories of what happened in Ohio, not to mention the possibility the vote was hacked in that and other states, because we still have voting machines that, you know, don't tell us anything. They don't, there's no paper trail. And all the stories that came out of many states, Florida in particular, about voting machines being set up where the default was Bush, or when you changed screens, it flipped your Kerry vote back to Bush, or if you pushed the Kerry button, it said thank you for voting for George Bush. I mean, literally thousands of these reports. And those are the people who bothered to report them. In any case, this all got discussed. And this was a terrible embarrassment for Ken Blackwell, who is both the Secretary of State in the state of Ohio and wants to be the next governor of Ohio. And so he was being backed, of course, by the Attorney General of Ohio. These guys were, you know, big time Republicans, big high up in the Bush. Well, the Secretary of State was in charge of the Bush campaign in the state, just like Catherine Harris was in Florida. And coming out of this, coming out of all the things that were discovered down there, a lawsuit was filed against George W. Bush for election fraud and others, Bush et al., for election fraud in Ohio. And so what has happened now? In a stunning legal attack, right, Steve Rosenfeld and Harvey Wasserman in the Columbus Free Press, Columbus, Ohio Free Press, in a stunning legal attack, Ohio's Republican Attorney General has moved for censure against the four attorneys who sued George W. Bush et al. In an attempt to investigate the Buckeye State's bitterly contested November 2nd election. Now, censuring an attorney is no small thing. It's like not being an attorney, I can't. My understanding of it is it's like a finding of malpractice against a doctor. I mean, there are consequences to it. There are, you know, it's a problem. Robert Fetrakis, Susan Truitt, Cliff Arnebeck, and Peter Pekowski, and Cliff has been on this program more than once, I believe, were named by Attorney General James Petro in a filing with the Ohio Supreme Court. Petro charges the November Moss versus Bush and the Moss versus Moyer filing by the election protection legal team were frivolous, and he's wanting official censure and fines. This is what the Attorney General says in a January 18th memo in support of the suit. He said, instead of evidence, contesters, offered only theory, conjecture, hypothesis, and invective. A contest proceeding is not a toy for idle hands. It is not to be sued to make a political point or to be used as a discovery tool or to be used to inconvenience or harass public officials or to be used as a publicity gimmick. Well, if there were no problems with the vote in Ohio, if it was fairly apparent that nobody had committed crimes or that there was no possibility that anybody had committed crimes, I would agree with him. But the list just goes on and on and on of what happened in Ohio. I mean, this is really horrific. So Cliff Arnebeck, one of the attorneys that now the attorney general for the state is going after, says it has been Petro, the attorney general, and Ohio's partisan Republican Secretary of State J. Kenneth Blackwell, who have stonewalled the election challenge legal proceedings. Both have refused to submit any evidence to the court to refute the allegations in the election challenge case, which claimed that George W. Bush actually lost the state of Ohio, by the way. In this lawsuit, they're actually suggesting Bush lost, consider. And Petro, so why don't they just submit the evidence? Petro's office has also refused to allow any Ohio public election official to be deposed. Arnebeck says their cage has been rattled and they popped their cork. Chairman of the Ohio Republican Party is going berserk because he can't stand the fact we're not going away. We are still pursuing the legal investigation and the legal interrogations. They are just beside themselves because they cannot withstand cross-examination. Revenge. This is what's going on now in Ohio. Revenge. State Attorney General. So, thought you'd want to know. It is not new. Just ask Joe Wilson about that one. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, by the way. TomHartmann.com, our website, if you want to drop into the live chat room or peruse the Articles on Democracy file or any archives of the program, White Rose Society. And links, of course, to our web stream. John in Grand Rapids, Michigan is on the line. Hey, John, what's in your mind?
Well, once again, you are out in the fringes of politics with your concern about what's happening in Ohio.
Front
page on USA Today about the exit polls, and the reason that the exit polls were screwed up was because of, there's no nice way to say it because of stupid young Democrats. I mean, it's just incredible. The only time anything's ever been proved wrong with these with voting, it's been Democrats who've been involved in it.
John, now let me get this straight here.
Republicans.
Let me get this straight here, John. It's you're suggesting that a company that has been doing exit polls for years and years, a guy who essentially invented the whole thing, and in one of the most critical elections of our day, was completely incompetent?
No, he's admitting he was completely incompetent. He's admitting it. He's admitting that he had people working for him who were young Democrats, and also that Democrats coming out of the polls were more eager than other people to express their opinion. So
yeah.
The exit polls were completely biased.
I don't believe it. I'm sorry, John.
Right on the
call me.
Of the USA Today,
that doesn't make it true, John. Call me a conspiracy nut if you want.
Chuckle. You are a conspiracy nut.
Okay, there you
are.
Thank you.
You are.
I appreciate your opinion, John. It's nice, always nice to hear from you. I'm not buying it. Not buying it at all. Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, how are you, Tom?
I'm well. How are you, Alice?
It's a busy day.
It is, yes.
How do you record machines that leave no records? They still have these machines, Tom.
Oh, I know, and it takes them. This is not a discussion that I wanted to get into today because it's like rehashing old stuff over and over and over again. But the reality is that this is we have, and all of these the four major companies that have these machines and have them out are all affiliated with the Republican Party in one way or another, as were executives in this polling company. And it's like, I don't believe it. I don't trust it. I want paper. I want paper. And you got people like John calling up and saying, oh, just trust it. You know, everything's fine. Don't worry. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. They better wake up.
Yep, it's time for a lot of people to wake up. Alice, I appreciate your call. Great to hear from you.
Thank
you.
Okay, have a good day.
You too. And can keep warm there. And actually, in Humboldt County, it ain't so bad. Steve in Atlanta's on the line. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'd like to tell John something.
Okay.
A previous caller. Basically, I would give up all my conspiracy theories if the recount in Ohio were done properly.
Yeah, even just one county.
Period.
Yeah. They stonewalled this thing. They flim-flammed it. I mean, it was just first of all, there was no recount in Ohio.
It was done illegally.
There were these little tiny samples done, and the voting machine companies came in and taped up on the wall what the results were, and then they reprogrammed the computers to get those results, and then they said, "Gee, the computer says this is the result."
That's right.
I mean, gee. I mean,
and you know, you're supposed to do a hand count, and you're supposed to. You take 3% randomly. You do a hand count. I'm sorry. You got to go.
Go out. We got 10 seconds.
Yeah, and none of it done. One done randomly. The machine and the hand count didn't rematch. I mean, it just wasn't done right.
Yeah.
Do it correctly. Stop thinking of what I'm looking for. Wrongdoing.
Yep. There you go. And that's the basis of this lawsuit that Cliff Arnebeck has filed, and now the Attorney General coming after him. Thanks a lot for the call, Steve. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes after the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
W, you gotta help me. These mercury emission standards are gonna kill my bottom line. You'll take care of it? How much should I make this out for? Do say hello to your pappy.
There's an interesting question. And welcome back. 25 minutes before or after the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Here's the question that I would like to ask the polling folks, and we'll see how this shakes out. There's an interesting graph that is widely available. It's not contested by anybody. It's called the redshift graph. And what it shows is that in about 30 states, the exit polls were actually accurate. They predicted the election within a point or two, within less than a point, within a tenth of a point or two. And in fact, there were several states where the polls actually predicted, you know, that Bush would do better than he did, or vice versa. In any case, however, there were these exceptions. There were these odd exceptions. And there were eight major ones, and I don't have the list in front of me right now. I just pulled it up on the other computer, but my printer's out of paper, so I couldn't print it during the break. But in any case, there were these odd, but I'll get it to you. There were these odd states, just a few, where you saw a 4, 5, 6% shift from what the exit polls said to what the voting machines told us. They call this the red shift, in every case, they shifted toward. You know, the exit polls showed Kerry doing better and the results from the machine showed Bush doing better. And just by coincidence, just by some sort of magical coincidence, those were all, every single one of them, battleground states. And so apparently, just by coincidence, Matofsky and company, the pollers, just in the battleground states, hired young, inexperienced kids, and Democrats were less willing to talk just in the battleground states. Give me a break. These guys, you know, the actual polling results are going to come out in the next day or two. These guys are getting us ready for them. And it's not going to look good when it comes out. And so they're trying to, you know, do an end run. Don't worry. Yes, it looks just like the Ukraine. But it's because just in the battleground states, we accidentally hired some young kids. Sorry. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, just wanted to comment. You had that one wacko right-wing caller there that was claiming the USA Today article that the exit polling was wrong and inaccurate.
Yes.
Yeah, even that Republican consultant who advised Clinton and he's now backstabbing him with that Hillary book, what's his name, Dick?
Dick Morris, yeah.
Dick Morris. He even said that there's something fishy, and you wrote this, I think, in a piece, that the exit polling is never wrong. It's the gold standard, always accurate within 1%. And every other democracy in the Western world uses exit polling to immediately declare a winner, and then they verify the exit poll data with their paper ballots, 2 weeks of counting the paper, always within 1% accurate.
Yeah, and it has been for years and years. Now, the article in USA Today said this was the most inaccurate since 1988. I suspect it was worse than that, but in any case, yeah.
No, so it's just
that was Dick Morris. Actually, Dick Morris's conspiracy theory was that the exit polls had been rigged, that somebody had gotten inside the exit poll companies and was manipulating the data to make George Bush look bad.
But the larger point is that he admitted that it's always accurate.
Well, it wasn't an admission; it was his whole assertion. His, you know, he did polling, and the whole point of an exit poll is that, you know, on any other kind of poll, people can say one thing and do another, but with an exit poll, you're getting people right after they did something. They actually did show up and vote. A lot of people say, yes, I'm going to vote, and they don't. They actually will tell, you know, generally will tell you who they voted for. And if this new Republican conspiracy theory about ashamed Republicans is true, there must be, it's really startling that you'd have 5, 6, 7, 8% of the people who vote for George Bush are ashamed of their vote. I mean, essentially, that's the essence of what they're saying.
It's all out in the open, so.
Yeah, there you go. Well, no, I mean, they're suggesting that, it's because people didn't want to tell that they actually voted for Bush.
And yeah,
it's
right.
People were just, they were too ashamed.
Why does Europe use exit polling and paper ballot?
Well, and when I live, they're accurate within a tenth of a point, always.
Yep.
Gotta go, Tom, thanks.
Yep.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, do you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
And then there were two. A second Walmart in the Canadian province of Quebec has seen a majority of employees signing union cards indicating they wish to be represented by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The Saint-Hyacinthe store joins a store in Jonquière, Quebec, as the only two unionized Walmarts in the world. Under a ruling by the Quebec Labor Relations Board, both stores were automatically certified because a majority of employees wanted representation. Walmart representatives called the ruling undemocratic because a secret ballot wasn't required and employees may have been intimidated into signing.
The Service Employees International Union is fighting efforts by the state of Wisconsin to create tax credits, individual health insurance savings accounts. SEIU Wisconsin political director Robert Craig says the union opposes them because they'll seriously undermine good employer-provided health insurance for workers.
What they're designed to do is to completely change the health insurance landscape in this country. In order to have the account be tax-deductible, it has to be connected to a insurance plan, either a family plan or an individual plan with a high deductible, $1,000 to $2,000. And so your employer would have to provide that, and therefore it literally encourages the creation of very high-deductible health insurance plan.
Congress has already created federal tax credits for these health savings accounts, and now a seemingly organized campaign by conservatives is underway to do the same at the state level.
I think what they really are is they're an attempt to roll back the post-World War II compact that a good job included employer-based health insurance.
Craig says real health care reform that addresses the high costs and provides universal coverage for workers is what's really needed.
The city of Denver has seen union membership jump by 50% over the last year. Much of the increase has been attributed to the Teamsters, who launched a massive organizing campaign of non-uniformed municipal employees in 2004. The increase could give the city's unions the leverage they need to put collective bargaining on Denver's ballot. Non-uniformed workers are also represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, as well as the Colorado Federation of Public Employees. The unions say that collective bargaining will give employees more say in their fate when it comes to benefits and pay. Critics say it will constrain the ability of the city to balance the budget by taking power away from policymakers.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency temp and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Rest easy, we'll be gentle men. Let nothing make us shine.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Here are the results. Just to close this thing out, I just have to wrap this up. In the state of Oregon, which has mail-in balloting, I believe it's either Oregon or Washington. I'm pretty sure it's Oregon. They have mail-in balloting, which I think would probably make it a little more difficult to do an exit poll, wouldn't it? But in any case, in Oregon, the poll result actually showed 1.6% higher for George Bush than came out. So that pretty much. And Montana, 0.5%. In most states, in Maryland, in D.C., and ME? I forget which state. In Nevada, in Oklahoma, yeah, it's pretty much they were pretty much right on. In Hawaii, in California, they were pretty much right on. In Tennessee. But New Mexico, 3.6% shift toward Bush, the red shift. This is where the voting machines said Bush won when the exit polls didn't say that. So this is in New Mexico, 3.6% more. The voting machine said he got 3.6% more votes than the exit polls showed. In Florida, it was 6%. Must have been a lot of embarrassed voters in Florida. In Ohio, it was 6.2%. In Ohio, well, here's the exit polls showed Kerry carrying Ohio by 52.1% to 47.9%, whereas the actual machine count in Ohio was 49% Kerry, 51% Bush. So it pretty much flipped. In Pennsylvania, there was a 6.7% shift, went from 54% for Kerry down to in the exit polls to 51% in the actual polls or in the machine tally. In North Carolina, this is interesting, 8% shift. In New York, an 8% shift. In Arkansas, an 8%. In South Carolina, a 9% shift. So, strange doings. This from the Scoop website, scoop.co.nz. They've had the exit polls for some time. The stuff was out there, and a few people, alert people caught it. Yeah, on this day in history, by the way, on January 20th, 1981, Iran released 52 American hostages held for 444 days, minutes after the presidency had passed from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan. I have some memorial thoughts on that to share with you, as well as the whole idea of the robber barons being back. First, let's go to the phone lines, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Paul in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. It's interesting, your caller, John, who I don't think it's helpful. One of your callers called him a right-wing wacko. I don't know if it's helpful to call people wackos. It was interesting that he jumped on you calling you a conspiracy theorist or something like that.
Actually, I may well have given that label to myself in that conversation.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to talk a little briefly about conspiracies. The Gulf of Tonkin incident, which sort of got us into the Vietnam War, was that not a conspiracy?
Well, and those people who pointed out that there was no evidence, actually, of an attack on a warship there were derided as conspiracy theorists, as were those who talked about the USS Maine. I mean, yes.
And the U.S. sponsored coup in Guatemala, and you just mentioned Iran, the overthrowing of was it Mossadegh, whatever his name was?
Yeah.
So, you know, conspiracies are a part of U.S. governmental, you know, history. It goes on in the past, and I'm sure it's going on now.
Yeah. My point was, I don't think it takes a conspiracy theorist to think that there's something wrong with this, that something stinks. And I'm, you know, there are folks and a lot of people in Congress and whatnot, people who say, well, yes, Ohio was... Perhaps it was stolen, perhaps not, but the situation is that it was wrong. What happened there was wrong. But it was all out in the open, and it was wrong. And frankly, I think somebody should be prosecuted for it. The fact that you've got in white Republican districts, you could walk in and vote in 30 minutes and be out. And in virtually every case, these long lines are reported, and it was a cold, rainy day all day in Ohio that day. In virtually all cases, the 6-hour, 7-hour, 8, 9, 10, 12-hour lines were in heavily Democratic areas. And, you know, this was something that could easily have been predicted. They have had elections before in Ohio. They know who lives where. And clearly, you know, and so, you know, was that a conspiracy or was that a crime? I don't know. That this is the focus of Arnebeck's lawsuit. They're alleging that it's a crime. So anyhow, Paul, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Stacy in Ohio is on the line. Hey, Stacy, where in Ohio are you?
Adams County.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. What are your thoughts on this?
I have a question, actually.
Sure.
Is there any way that we as voters in Ohio can find out if our votes were counted correctly?
Well, apparently not. Apparently Kenneth Blackwell is telling you no.
Terrific.
Yeah, there was an attempt. You know, the Green Party came in and attempted to have a recount.
Uh-huh.
And instead of actually doing the random 3% recount that's specified by law, they did this very hand-counted, hand-picked thing. They had the voting machine companies come in and reset the machines for the recount so that they matched the totals that they had previously shown. And it was, in my opinion, it was fraudulent. And the opinion of many people in Ohio who participated in the process, which is why Arnebeck and company filed this lawsuit for which they're now being punished.
That's really comforting, knowing that my vote may have been counted for Bush when I actually voted for Kerry.
Yeah, well, I would suggest that you contact the Ohio Secretary of State's office, the Ohio Attorney General's office, and let them know that you don't appreciate the fact that these folks who are trying to get to the truth in this matter are being prosecuted now by the Attorney General. And contact your elected officials, contact your member of Congress and your two senators, and ask them to stand up for transparent voting in the state of Ohio, honesty in voting in the state of Ohio.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good luck, Stacy. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. And keep fighting the good fight. Keep plugging on there. Tom in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was a poll watcher for the Democratic Party in Michigan, and typically Michigan split. The eastern side of the state typically goes Democratic, but the western side is much more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a larger agenda here or a problem with our party is we need to really get off something like these. Maybe not a conspiracy. I mean, we have difficult problems and with like the committee chairs and comments that people like Barbara Boxer makes, and the party has certainly changed from when I first have been really paying attention to politics. And I think for the it's gone worse. We're going backwards. We got our butts kicked, plain and simple.
Yeah. Now in Michigan is one of the states where the exit poll results were pretty much in line with the actual machine results. So apparently, Michigan, Republicans are not embarrassed.
Republicans are not. Well, we're it's dominated by Oakland and Wayne County over by Detroit. It always is. It always has been.
Yeah.
What's
your point, Tom?
Our point is that we our party is no longer, I believe, the party for like the JFK party is the way I look at it. It's changed that we have people like Nancy Pelosi and Terry McAuliffe, and I just disagree with a lot they're saying.
For example,
if Terry McAuliffe, they take bits and pieces of a president's what they think is wrongdoing is, and they just attack it, and then they come up with T-shirts and we get people like Michael Moore that spews out propaganda. And I think I want someone with a clear vision and ideas. I haven't heard a good idea of attacking a certain problem in this country. How are we going to form? Social Security was big for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sick of it being an issue. I would love to put my money in a private account.
You can right now.
You
can right now. 401ks, SEPs, IRAs, there's all kinds of private accounts.
Well, I put 7.6% and then my boss put 7.6%.
Then you've already got it. You've already got it, Tom. You've already got one.
I've already got one. Yeah, but not in my 401k. I'm talking into Social Security. He has to match that.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I see it. I want vision from an our individual party, from an individual leader, and I just don't get it from them.
Yeah. Well,
that's the problem. I don't care about voting irregularities. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is the problem with our party.
Tom, I don't disagree with you that there is a lack of clear and coherent statements in the Democratic Party. And this is, they're not on point and they're not on task. I will disagree with you about Social Security. Social Security is not and never was designed to be a retirement program. It's an insurance program. It's an insurance against disaster program. And the government has put into place retirement programs where you can take money that is free of taxation, so it'll accumulate faster. And as you said, you're contributing. I think you said you're contributing to one of those. Your phone was breaking up. And you know, you can get into those, and you can do it without the government coming and putting a gun to your head and saying you have to do this, which is technically what they do whenever they take any kind of taxes. But we had a problem back in the 1930s, and we'd had it for a long time in the United States, of more than 50% of the elderly population living in such terrible poverty that people were literally dying of starvation. And we also had a problem of people who were killed on the job or just killed, people who died leaving young children, and they couldn't care for themselves. They didn't, you know, people, what we would now would call survivor benefits or disability benefits. And we had a problem of people who didn't have family that could take care of them, who became disabled, like my friend Michael out in New Mexico, who broke his neck 5 years ago and literally broke his neck, and he's paralyzed from the neck down. And so we said, we're going to put together an insurance program that's going to take care of these folks. And that's called Social Security. It was an insurance program. It's not a retirement program. So if you want the government to have a retirement program, a mandatory retirement program, which I don't think is such a bad idea, then we should have a conversation. That is the Democrats and the Republicans, Bush and whatnot. We should be having a conversation about whether or not we're going to have a forced, mandatory, required to participate or you go to prison retirement program. But that conversation is not the conversation that we're having right now. What they're talking about is taking part of an insurance program and handing it over to private corporations. And you're going to see the same thing that you see with other insurance programs that private corporations run, like car insurance and malpractice insurance. You know, they work, but the insurance industry is getting rich off them. And right now, the Social Security Administration is not getting rich off Social Security. That's the bottom line with that issue. And I think that there is leadership from Democrats on that, trying to salvage a program, keep alive a program which has done a very, very good job for 70 years now and can continue to do a very good job essentially forever. With regard to Michael Moore and propaganda, yeah, I saw. Did you see Fahrenheit 9/11?
Yes.
Yeah. What
and
part
then
of that?
I saw Dick Morris's version, Fahrenheit 9/11, his rebuttal to it.
Uh-huh.
And so it was.
He takes it apart, huh?
Well, he does, and to me, I don't. You know, you don't know the whole truth as an individual, but it becomes embarrassing for the party, and it's unnecessary. And like you said, we need clear vision and people to explain things in a way that I think our message is being lost over people like Howard Dean and we're going. I don't like the direction it's going. It's very upsetting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me just give you a little reassurance on Howard Dean. I'm broadcasting here from Vermont. I've lived here for 10 years. And Howard Dean, it was, if anything, continually being criticized by progressives in Vermont for being too middle of the road. He was. This is a state. This is the only state in the union that whose constitution does not require it to have a balanced budget. And he, as a governor, forced this state to have a balanced budget every year, even though it wasn't required by the Constitution. Other states are running up deficits. Look at California. They're $9 billion in debt now. Arnold is going to solve his problems by borrowing even more money. Howard Dean wouldn't do that. Howard Dean was an absolute radical fiscal conservative. And he's not the wacko, wild-eyed guy that has been portrayed in the media. He's just not. He was head of the governors, the Democratic Governors Association. He's a good administrator. I think he's a good man. I think he's gotten a bad rap. But anyhow, thanks for the call, Tom. Good to hear from you. Keep up the good work. Keep spreading the word. Dave in Arcata, California. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, good morning, Tom. The latest thing for the Republicans is to call liberal talk shows pretending to be a Democrat, suggesting that we become more like the Republicans, screw the middle class and the working class.
I don't think so, Dave. I really don't think that Tom was a Republican trying to pretend he was a Democrat.
He thinks we should just start benefiting the rich.
No, I think that he represents a large chunk of the Democratic Party, which are folks who think they are in the center because America has shifted so far to the right that they are essentially right now where arguably Reagan, certainly Nixon, were, 30 years ago.
Well, anyway, that's not what I call. There's two points that you might appreciate from where you're at today.
Sure.
I volunteered at a radio station helping a friend on election night, and the initial thing that came in was raw data of exit polls.
Yeah.
It showed Bush leading in Idaho and Utah. And that was it. He was even losing Alabama and Texas and all.
Yeah.
I ran out to get Tom, and when he got back, that was all gone, and now we've drifted over to the early results. But I think the key is going to be seeing raw paper data from exit polls. Because once you feed anything into a computer, the computer can be invaded. You know that.
Yeah. So you think you're with Dick Morris that the exit polls might have been rigged just as much as the vote?
Once you feed them into a computer, the computer can be invaded. Unless you can look at the raw paper data and tabulate them by hand, it'll be rigged. I'll tell you something that happened here in California. You know, as Secretary of State outlawed unverifiable machines. We have one poorer county, big county, San Bernardino County, but it's a very much a lower working class, a highly immigrant county, that said they couldn't afford to modify their election process that late and got permission to use the voting machine. San Bernardino County went overwhelmingly for Bush.
Interesting.
And there aren't that many Republicans in that county.
Yeah, well, you just never know, Dave. As you said, you get it into a computer, anything could happen. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Yeah. We really do need to go back to some integrity, honesty, and faith in our electoral process here in the United States. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartmann. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxin Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled them.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Columbus, Ohio on the line. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Tom. I wanted to cover election issues you were talking about earlier.
Sure.
And unlike what the guy said earlier, you know I'm a conservative, and I don't make any bones about that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All,
thank you for not imitating
Ohio
a Democrat.
Here, the stories of 9, 10, 12-hour waits, that's total fabrication. You know, having been through the polls here, I live in one of the wealthy, you know, Caucasian districts. And when I got there, just before the polls closed, the lines were outside in the rain. Still, it was an hour wait.
Interesting.
Everybody waited about an hour,
yeah,
all over town.
So,
and I talked to people from all different precincts throughout the day, and that's what they're saying. They're waiting. Okay. Everybody waited.
So those newscasts that we saw of people being in line for 9 and 10 hours, they just made those up?
The lines were there for 9 or 10 hours, but nobody waited in line individually to vote for 9 hours. You talk to the poll workers, oh, yeah, this line's been like this for all day long, 10 hours, 12 hours.
Okay.
Whatever. But the thing is, no one individual waited in line for 12 hours.
Well, it's, you know, Dave, I'm pleased that you believe that, and thanks for the update. But, CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, not exactly conspiracy nuts, disagree with you. John in San Jose, California on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I really love your ideas. Anyway, I'm really tired of a lot of Republican-like Democrats. But one thing I do agree with is that the guy who said that, I forgot, from Michigan, I think, he said that he wanted to privatize Social Security. I think I'm not for that, but he should be a Republican then, is what he should be.
Yeah, well, that's why I think why Dave called and said that this was a Republican calling and pretending to be a Democrat. And you know, maybe he was. I don't know.
I'm not looking for conspiracy, but when you have Biden and Dodd who criticize Rice, for instance, in the Congress, on the compromise in the Senate, and then they vote for her, what does that say?
I know. This is a point that I made yesterday. Why is it that only John Kerry and Barbara Boxer are coming out, and now Robert Byrd against this? It's wrong. It's just wrong. John in San Jose. John, I got to move along, wrap up this hour. We will be picking up the show in the next hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You are in the middle of the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. The No Boring Zone. Take no imitations.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
And then there were two. A second Walmart in the Canadian province of Quebec has seen a majority of employees signing union cards indicating they wish to be represented by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The St. Hyacinthe store joins a store in Jonquière, Quebec, as the only two unionized Walmarts in the world. Under a ruling by the Quebec Labor Relations Board, both stores were automatically certified because a majority of employees wanted representation. Walmart representatives called the ruling undemocratic because a secret ballot wasn't required and employees may have been intimidated into signing.
The Service Employees International Union is fighting efforts by the state of Wisconsin to create tax credits for individual health insurance savings accounts. SEIU Wisconsin political director Robert Craig says the union opposes them because they'll seriously undermine good employer-provided health insurance for workers.
What they're designed to do is to completely change the health insurance landscape in this country. In order to have the account be tax-deductible, it has to be connected to a insurance plan, either a family plan or an individual plan with a high deductible, $1,000 to $2,000. And so your employer would have to provide that, and therefore it literally encourages the creation of very high deductible health insurance plan.
Congress has already created federal tax credits for these health savings accounts, and now a seemingly organized campaign by conservatives is underway to do the same at the state level.
I think what they really are is they're an attempt to roll back the post-World War II compact that a good job included employer-based health insurance.
Craig says real health care reform that addresses the high costs and provides universal coverage for workers is what's really needed.
The city of Denver has seen union membership jump by 50% over the last year. Much of the increase has been attributed to the Teamsters, who launched a massive organizing campaign of non-uniformed municipal employees in 2004. The increase could give the city's unions the leverage they need to put collective bargaining on Denver's ballot. Non-uniformed workers are also represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, as well as the Colorado Federation of Public Employees. The unions say that collective bargaining will give employees more say in their fate when it comes to benefits and pay. Critics say it will constrain the ability of the city to balance the budget by taking power away from policymakers.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency temp and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
It would be funny watching George W. running around the country on his little stick horse, pretending to be a reformer, if it was not so sad, so wrong. His latest war whoop is that, by gollies, he wants to reform the so-called tort laws so HMOs, hospitals, doctors, and drug companies can't be driven out of business by us patients who sue them when their practices harm us. Bush's handler sent him to Collinsville, Illinois, just outside of St. Louis, where he held a photo op and labeled both St. Clair and Madison counties as, quote, judicial hell holes. He noted that 720 malpractice and wrongful death suits have been filed there against area practitioners in the past 7 years, with jury awards causing enormous economic damage to them and curtailing health care in the area. The issue of tort law has long been the prerogative of state governments, but George says it now must be federalized because, he says, that, quote, junk lawsuits are proliferating all over. Juries, he wailed, are handing out such massive judgments to patients who sue that entire hospitals, groups of doctors, and other medical businesses are shutting down. Problem is, it just ain't so. The watchdog group Public Citizen found that of the 720 cases that George cited, only 14 resulted in jury verdicts, and only 7 of those verdicts sided with the patients. Excuse me, but 7 verdicts in 7 years is hardly a federal crisis. Moreover, Bush's proposed remedy is to cap pain and suffering damages at $250,000 per case. Yet in the 2 counties cited by George as judicial hellholes, only 1 case, one, resulted in a jury award that exceeded this cap. Again, this is hardly a runaway system requiring federal intervention. This is Jim Hightower saying, to put some truth on Bush's lies about junk lawsuits and to help defend your legal rights, call Public Citizen, 202-588-7741.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. It's the second hour of our Thursday program. Every Thursday in our second hour, we explore, at least for the first few minutes of the hour, a dimension that we may not have considered. Things that you might take a step away from politics for a moment, or at least to just a little off-center, and consider the things that you thought you knew that you don't know, or that you thought you didn't know that you do know, or that maybe you didn't know that you didn't know, or maybe you did. Maybe everything you know is even wrong.
But you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could be. It's our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. And today I wanted to have Caroline Casey on here. Caroline is the founder of the Coyote Network News. She does a radio show, the Visionary Activist Show, on Pacifica Network. I was on a program. Hey, Carolyn, it was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that?
Last week,
okay. Yes, so you can tell how my science sense of time is these days. And it was a hoot. And you do and that program was on the air in Los Angeles, as I recall.
Actually, the Bay Area, San Francisco.
The Bay Area, San Francisco. There you go. Yeah.
Archive.
Yep. And a marvelous show. Is there a website, by the way, for your work?
Yes. Visionaryactivism.com.
Visionaryactivism.com. Caroline, when I was on your program, you were talking about the the interesting astrological significance of a whole bunch of events that have happened in the Bush administration. And I'm good friends with Gene Houston, and Gene was really trashed for she did this really was a psychological thing, not a kind of New Age thing, of having in the White House helping Hillary imagine how would Eleanor Roosevelt deal with the kind of attacks that Hillary was getting, you know, and just, you know, and they said, oh, she's channeling Eleanor Roosevelt. But, you know, and she wasn't. I mean, you know, but they made it into a big deal. And Gene talked about how, and this, and I guess this is just common knowledge. It was in the news and everything. It's been in the news. How Nancy Reagan had an astrologer, and the astrologer determined the time and location of most of the events, most of the major events in the Reagan administration, and a lot of small events, things that had to do with campaigns and whatnot. And this astrologer actually had probably more control over the Reagan administration than Ronald Reagan himself did in many regards. And I was wondering if you could just recap for us, or even share with us that little riff you did when you opened your show, if you still have it.
Yeah, well, I have it in my mind.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as creatively suspicious people and awakening the compassionate trickster within all of us, we want to look at the word inauguration, which actually comes, if you look it up in a great dictionary, from the word augury. And the augur was the woman or man who went out into nature and discerned the patterns of creation and determined by those patterns who was the most responsible human to participate in creation, and then they would be inaugurated. So we want our inauguration augury, absolutely. And if we have an inauguration, we can certainly have an ex-auguration as well. You used a great word in your intro, too, which is we're convening our council to sagacuate, but you used the word consider, which literally means con with sitter the stars. And it's the opposite of a disaster, which means against the stars. And we go, oh, may this be the lowest nadir of disastrous regimes, you know, and we gather to consider to line up. We don't have to believe in astrology, but as you say, Joan Quigley was Reagan's astrologer.
Mm.
She did a lot of, she was sort of a, you know, right-wing old-time astrologer, but she did say to him, you've got to forget this evil empire stuff, and this is your moment in history, and, you know, here you go.
Mm.
We I think one of our phrases for now is, you know, appalled but not surprised, as we anticipate Bush's attempt to make his mark in history by putting Clarence Thomas as, you know, head Supreme Court judge and even switching Gonzales to the Supremes and all that. But we're looking also at encouraging dissension, too. If he does appoint Clarence Thomas as Scalia will be mad, and he's a vengeful kind of guy. So we go, oh, may they scramble with each other. Part of it, I find what's heartening, again, you know, there's always 20, 30 stories going on at once, and we get to, and they can be contradictory and all true,
uh-huh.
And we get to choose which one we want to animate. But all of the augurs are about revelation, you know, and things becoming visible, and in Bush's chart and U.S. chart, and, you know, we can dive into that. And even the I Ching, when consulted, says, you know, this is a time of unmasking when the visible, the invisible becomes visible.
Well, I think there's a real sense of that in America, but we only have 7 minutes here. So if you could just share with me to start out with, you were talking about how bombings and wars and things under this Bush administration were started on in very auspicious moments.
Or inauspicious. I mean,
yes.
I don't mean to imply at all that they were using astrology, it's just that they were sort of odd, dark, hypnotic forces. Yeah, it's true that every time Reagan bombed someplace, it was on a full moon. And we go, no, I don't think he was getting bad astrological advice, in which we'd say, no, forget this bombing thing. But, you know, it's like our great ally.
And this wasn't a military decision, because our military technology doesn't need a full moon.
No, and a lot of it was during the day, so it's not like the moon was illuminating anything. I think they were just getting set off like Wolfman. And mm-hmm. Catherine Austin Fitz says, you know, unless communities reverently cultivate their resources, predators will come in and kidnap them. And in the same way with our imagination, you know, what will we do with our wild and precious imaginations? Unless we cultivate those things, those qualities, predators will come in and kidnap them. And so, for instance, just the perverse, the kind of counterintuitive perversity of George Bush. He begins bombing of Iraq on the first day of spring, the celebration of emergent life. It's the Persian New Year, and we go, oh, what? The inauguration itself is interesting, too. It's always when the sun arrives at 0 degrees of Aquarius, which is the constellating of community. It's traditionally been a symbol this day, pre-existing when we kind of kidnapped it, seed groups with a new vision of civilization as the symbol for this first beginning of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
Bush will give his faux State of the Union address on February 2nd, which is Candlemas, one of the four gates of power, when it comes to us as Groundhog's Day, but it's when Persephone lights her candle, begins her ascent up from the underworld. And we go, oh, we've got to reanimate these and inhale them back and use these, line up with it.
So he's using all these ancient, some folks would call ancient pagan holy days or power days, as the moments, and I use pagan probably in the good sense, although as stepping off points for things.
Well, yeah. I mean, all cultures derive their calendar as well as their frame story from the stars. We get our days of the week from seven visible planets. I mean, so it's not 25,000 years humans have honored the change of seasons, and it's the model that, deliberate celebration of change of season, stirs force and power. But but let me also just lay out a little bit about you don't have to believe in astrology, but just what it would say. It says to us what we know.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Pluto, principle of death and rebirth and intensity. At the beginning of 2004, at the end of 2004, and the entire summer of 2005, will what's called station appear to stand still at 22 degrees of Sagittarius, and there are images for each degree of the zodiac. The image for that is the crown and torch of the Statue of Liberty, the fight to defend democracy against dictatorship and the rule of tyranny. And it is squaring the U.S. Neptune. When this country was born, its Neptune, its vision, its myth was at 22 degrees of Virgo. So we'd say the soul of this country is at stake. We know this, but it does give us a framework.
Through the end of the summer, of this coming summer.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we know much is on the table. I mean, this is really it. And just as a footnote, the miracle of symbolism, Karl Rove's, what's called North Node and Dick Cheney's Moon are the same degree, 22 degrees of Pisces. And I kid you not, if you look it up in the book of degree symbols, the image is a ventriloquist with a wooden dummy entertains the crowd. And we go, ooh, yeah. That is kidnapping of the kidnapping of this country's soul. I don't know if you subjected yourself to listening to Bush's speech, but,
No, I've been on the air.
What?
I've been on the air for the last hour and a half, so I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was very tepid, and there were protesters hauled off periodically. But, oppression, which is always wrong, and freedom eternally right, and quoted Abe Lincoln about the value of, we go, may he be held to those words.
Yeah.
We want to inaugurate a time of satire and fresh language. And in Celtic tradition, satire was a little more powerful. You would satirize the king, and the king would have to respond, and whoever's satire was truer, the ground would open up and swallow the other person. We go, yeah, like that. Let's bring that back.
Yeah.
And certainly also in Bush's chart, we go, all right, we're going for a Nixon. We're going for a Watergate. And even the timing, too. We go, Watergate should begin hatching about June. Revelation should begin, shaking loose April, August, and February 2006. And we go, we're not giving this guy 4 years. We go, the bigger the swagger, the more the revelations shake loose. And the swagger factor is pretty high. And
So are you seeing astrologically as well, Caroline? Are you seeing,
yeah.
Caroline Casey, are you seeing in Bush's charts the same things that were evident in Nixon's at this point in his?
Yeah, it says whatever's been hidden comes out. And so we all devote ourselves to that going, yes, wherever the opportunity arises, the trickster part of us to participate in revelation. And I think the breaking of the spell, we might say that, for a lot of human history, subject to our gender or our race or our ancestry, safety has been found in hiding. And part of the astrological instructions of now are to break that spell and go, now safety comes in everybody coming out. you know, bold voices. You know, great Leonard Cohen says, ring the bell that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets through.
Yeah.
So we go, yeah, like that. So everybody out. Safety in embracing, no hiding.
Yeah, this is the strength in numbers, strength in power. This is hopefully the trend that Barbara Boxer began both yesterday and the day before in her grilling of Condi Rice, and also in the weeks prior to that when she was speaking out again about the Ohio election results.
Absolutely, and also I don't know if you heard Lincoln Chafee, a Republican from Rhode Island, did a sterling job grilling Condoleezza Rice about her disrespect for the democratic process in Venezuela. So we go, we want to extend our capacity to talk across borders and lines, and we want so much to come through that everybody, you know, goes, ooh, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea also of 7 Days in May, that great movie. It's worth another look. But there's a Burt Lancaster figure in that who's, you know, it's the military takes over right-wing coup. This is sort of the reverse. But the Burt Lancaster character is, you know, very right-wing and everything, but he can't stand to see the Constitution shredded. So even against his military alliance,
yeah. So you know, hopefully something like this will happen. We've been talking. Caroline, thank you so much for being with us. Caroline Casey, the Coyote Network News, her own radio program, the Visionary Activist Show on Pacifica, visionaryactivism.com, our website. Caroline, thank you.
Thank you. Bless your heart.
Thank you, too. We'll talk to you soon. 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
ongoing
get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And our website, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop in, visit the chat room, check out our link, Articles on Democracy. You may find some interesting things there. Visit the message boards. Let's go to the phone lines. Get back to the topic of politics, what's going on in the world today. Hey, John. John in Boston's on the line.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, John?
Great show as usual.
Thank you.
I just wanted to paraphrase what Barbara Boxer stated the other day, that the Bush administration has done more than Osama bin Laden could have ever dreamed of by going into a sovereign Arab nation and, like, taking it over.
Yeah, trying to take it over.
Yeah, it seems like we have the entire Arab diaspora now speaking hate against us and also taking physical action.
I've
heard stories about Americans traveling outside of the country and being harassed and hurt. I think the State Department, for one thing, should come clean and let all Americans know that it's not safe to travel outside of the United States anymore. And, you know, I just want your opinion on that.
Well, you've said it well. I mean, what has happened, we had the situation where 9/11 happened, and it was done by, apparently, by Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, put this thing together, and he did it with some money from Osama bin Laden, but bin Laden was not involved in the specific planning of it. And this is the official story that that we all are sharing. But I'm willing to assume for the moment that there's some truth to it. And Osama bin Laden was largely marginalized. He was an Islamic fundamentalist fanatic who we had given some power and money to. He had plenty of money of his own in Afghanistan. Helped him together with the Mujahideen, or put together the Mujahideen basically, and form Al Qaeda. To kick the Soviets out of Afghanistan. Our goal was to, kick out the Soviets. And he helped us do that. Then he goes back to Saudi Arabia and he says, okay, now we've got to make the rest of the Middle East just like Afghanistan, turn the Taliban, turn it back into a real, true fundamentalist Islamic state. Osama bin Laden's ideal was the Taliban. And he looks around and he says, okay, the most secular state on the whole Arab Peninsula, the whole Arabian Peninsula, was Iraq, Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein did not require that women wear veils. He tolerated Christians. In fact, the largest Christian community in all of the Middle East is in Iraq. He tolerated religious pluralism. He did not run the country by Islamic law. He was not even particularly observant himself of Islam. And so Osama bin Laden goes to the royal family and says, I've got an army, we're left over from Afghanistan. We're going to invade Iraq. And the Saudis not only said no, but when he said, well, I'm going to do it whether you want me to or not, they exiled him to Sudan. They threw him out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got this guy who's like a marginal nutcase, basically, but he's got a lot of money. And he keeps throwing attacks at us. And, Clinton deals with him like a criminal and tries to take him out. And he hits us on 9/11 on the World Trade Center. And most of the Arab world was horrified. They were all going, he doesn't speak for us. And so we had the whole world on our side at that point. Even the vast majority of the Islamic world And then George W. goes into swagger mode, and he gets General Boykin, who still is holds the same job, you know, and running around going, my God is bigger than your God. And now, as you say, we have managed to alienate the entire Arab world,
and
we're creating more terrorists than we're killing or stopping.
Well, I guess we should just sit and wait for the next presidential election where we all have votes counted.
I think long before that, we need to be getting very active about, number one, getting a voting system that we can have some confidence in the integrity of it, and number two, getting prepared for the 2006 for the next midterm elections, the 2006 elections, because the presidency is important. The most important though is the Congress, and particularly the House of Representatives, because that's where all spending begins and where it's just so much comes out of the House of Representatives. If you can get that, I mean, this was what Newt knew. You get the House of Representatives, you can eventually take the whole thing.
Right. And well, thanks a lot, Tom.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the call, John. Good to hear from you. This is where we need to be beginning. 29 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number is the Tom Hartman Program, the true people's radio.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
And then there were two. A second Walmart in the Canadian province of Quebec has seen a majority of employees signing union cards indicating they wish to be represented by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The St. Hyacinthe store joins a store in Jonquière, Quebec, as the only two unionized Walmarts in the world. Under a ruling by the Quebec Labor Relations Board, both stores were automatically certified because a majority of employees wanted representation. Walmart representatives called the ruling undemocratic because a secret ballot wasn't required and employees may have been intimidated into signing.
The Service Employees International Union is fighting efforts by the state of Wisconsin to create tax credits for individual health insurance savings accounts. SEIU Wisconsin Political Director Robert Craig says the union opposes them because they'll seriously undermine good employer-provided health insurance for workers.
What they're designed to do is to completely change the health insurance landscape in this country. In order to have the account be tax-deductible, it has to be connected to a insurance plan, either a family plan or an individual plan with a high deductible, $1,000 to $2,000. And so your employer would have to provide that, and therefore it literally encourages the creation of very high deductible health insurance plan.
Congress has already created federal tax credits for these health savings accounts, and now a seemingly organized campaign by conservatives is underway to do the same at the state level.
I think what they really are is they're an attempt to roll back the post-World War II compact that a good job included employer-based health insurance.
Craig says real health care reform that addresses the high costs and provides universal coverage for workers is what's really needed.
The city of Denver has seen union membership jump by 50% over the last year. Much of the increase has been attributed to the Teamsters, who launched a massive organizing campaign of non-uniformed municipal employees in 2004. The increase could give the city's unions the leverage they need to put collective bargaining on Denver's ballot. Non-uniformed workers are also represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, as well as the Colorado Federation of Public Employees. The unions say that collective bargaining will give employees more say in their fate when it comes to benefits and pay. Critics say it will constrain the ability of the city to balance the budget by taking power away from policymakers.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. FairJobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency temp and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. FairJobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Don't worry, wealthy gentlemen, let nothing make us twitch. This new global economy's designed to keep us rich.
We fly our trade in many lands, let all their leaders come to bend down and kiss us on the bum.
Yeah, it's the billionaires for Bush. They're celebrating today. The billionaires for Bush. The celebrations will go late into the night here tonight. Every generation, it's often said, must relearn the lessons of history. I'll tell you, this generation is getting a crash course. Shall we have a government of, by, and for we the people? Or shall we be governed by a powerful elite made up of the super rich, multinational corporations, and well-paid shills who do their bidding? Time will tell. We'll come back to that theme in just a moment. First, let's go to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin.
Yeah, you know, you were just talking to this gentleman that had just called before the break.
Yeah.
There's one thing you're leaving out. But first, the election. The Illuminati won this election. They had both candidates, the Illuminati Skull and Bones. And I think...
You think the Skull and Bones are the same as the Illuminati?
I think they're part of it. And it's the International Banking Cartel.
Have you been reading Robert Anton Wilson?
I've been reading about 50 different people that publish stuff about
this. Well, because, you know, it's interesting because Robert Anton Wilson wrote the Illuminati book. And I don't know him personally, but I'm good friends with a good friend of his. And my understanding is that he's quite open and public, that he just basically wrote it as fiction, just like L. Ron Hubbard wrote his original story, which now is Scientology, as fiction. And a lot of people are just like, they've latched onto it.
So. Well, that's a nice comment. But, you know, Bush did mention, didn't he mention in his yesterday the stars and everything?
I didn't notice. I know his
but
yeah.
Anyway.
Oh yeah. That was his way of referring to God, I think. But I can't.
Oh
remember.
Well.
Actually,
course.
Maybe he was talking about the planet Theta. It's possible he was talking about stars that are beyond the range of our sight. It's possible. Yeah. Same as L. Ron Hubbard.
Anyway, I think looking at the election now, this is my take on it, and this is my opinion.
Yeah.
I think that Kerry wasn't supposed to win. He had a secret agreement with Bush because he is a member of the Skull and Bones. And what had happened that changed everything dramatically was the internet dissent and the grassroots dissent. The people performed better than they anticipated. And I really think they pushed Kerry over, and he really did win the election. And now he's keeping his agreement because that's why he was just so...
That's why he was such a wuss. Armin, you know, it's a nice theory, but I can't go there with you. I'm sorry. I'm just not ready for it. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I have learned in my 5 decades on this planet never to dismiss anything out of hand. But I don't think so. I really think that John Kerry wanted to be president. I think he was going for it. He was working as hard as he could to get it. And what baffles me, frankly, is why when John Edwards wanted to fight the thing, John Kerry didn't. But you know, who knows? This is one of those things. Time will tell. It wasn't until November 12th of 2001. That was 12 months after the election. That's a year after the election. It wasn't until November 12th of 2001. That the consortium of news organizations that recounted the ballot in Florida published the results in the New York Times, pointing out that Al Gore, in fact, if every county had been recounted in the state of Florida, Al Gore, in fact, won the state of Florida. It took a year for that little bit of information to come out, and it was published on the front page. I don't know if it was the front page. It was published in the New York Times. You can find it in the New York Times archives. Just look for November 12, 2001, that story. It was published in the Washington Post. It was published in USA Today. It was somewhat buried. I mean, the main story was, you know, Gore's initial lawsuit was that he only wanted to recount, as I recall, 4 counties or maybe 5 counties. And the main headline was, if only those counties that Gore wanted recounted were recounted as Gore had originally suggested, then Gore still would have lost.
That was the headline. That's how they positioned the thing. That's how they framed the story. But then, you know, you'll recall Gore said, let every vote count. He said, let's actually count every single vote. And that's when George Bush said, no, we're going to put a stop to this, and sued him at the Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore. Bush was the one who initiated the lawsuit. And it took us a year to find out that Gore had actually won Florida. So how long is it going to take us to find out what the real results of this election were? Hard to say. One thing that's going to make it much more difficult is that in 2000, there were no, to the best of my knowledge in Florida, there were no machines that had no paper trail, or very few of them. And so, they, you know, everybody, they had these punch card ballots. They could at least count the things. And they did. But now we've got all these electronic machines. And how are you going to do a recount on these things? You can't. I mean, you just can't. Tony in Grand Rapids on the line in Michigan. Hey, Tony, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I just want to talk about that caller that called in about the voting lines that didn't exist.
Right.
2 weeks before the election, my girlfriend moved in with me, and I live in the city, and she lives in the suburbs. And we both left our apartment after dinner at 6 o'clock to go vote. She went to, because she didn't change her address in time, so she was still registered in the suburbs. She got home from voting at 7:30 and was 15 minutes away from the poll place. I live 5 minutes away, and I got home at 11.
Yeah. So you were voting in an area that was predominantly Democratic. She was voting in an area that was predominantly Republican, or is this just a coincidence?
Pretty much. And I did stand in line for 5 hours. There wasn't just a line there for 5 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that was in Michigan, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So you stood in line for 5 hours. Thank you for setting the record straight, Tony.
Yep.
I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Bye. And thanks for listening to us. They're on WTKG in Grand Rapids. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Lynn in Eureka, California, on the line. Hey, Lynn.
Hi. You know, I was just calling about Tom way back. I had the initial reaction that one of your other callers did, that he was a Republican in disguise. And the reason I had that probably is because I've listened to Rush Limbaugh in the past, and whenever someone calls up and disagrees with him, he calls him a Democratic seminar caller.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know if that really exists, but it sounded like that to me.
Well, it may be. It may be. My BS detector was not that alerted, frankly, with that call. And my sense of it was, given particularly that when I corrected him on points,
yes, he listened.
Yeah, he listened and he said, oh, okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that caused me to think that, you know, I mean, the reality is that there are probably the majority of registered Democrats are not really well informed on all these issues. I mean, just as the majority of registered Republicans think that the people who flew the planes into the towers were Iraqis.
Iraqis, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's the reality is that most people are not politically sophisticated. They don't pay much attention to the news, and they don't understand the issues with any particular depth. And so I'm you know, whatever he calls himself, I'm willing to assume that, you know, I just took that case on that call on face value. We have had calls, you know, where it was obviously somebody trying to be something they weren't. We had, you know, but and I point those out. But
well, that's why we need you, Tom. You got to get the word out.
Okay, there you go. Thanks a lot, Lynn. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Tim in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Tim.
Morning, Tom.
What's on your mind?
Thanks for the Viagra for the brain.
There you go. It's been a few days since we've used that one. What's up?
I just wanted to let everyone know that they can do a very simple thing today that's quite visible to protest the coronation. I did it this morning. I hung my American flag outside on my porch upside down as a sign of a distressed American.
Yeah. Now that's an interesting suggestion. We used to have stamps. There were postage stamps. I think it was the year that Bush was elected. The post office was issuing postal stamps that had a flag on them. And for months, every time I mailed a letter, I would put the flag on upside down on the letter. Yeah. Interesting. Good one.
You know what the companion thought I had as soon as I hung the flag? I thought, when am I going to take this down?
Yeah, there you go. Well,
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for the call, Tim. If Caroline is right, Caroline Casey is right, then you can take the flag down in a year and a half or so when the scandals start coming out and Bush gets impeached. We'll see. I think, though, that there are enough fed-up Americans, enough people that are just horrified
by the positions that he's taking, but who don't realize what they voted for and now are suddenly realizing, you know, that he's saying that, well, this is what you really voted for. What you really voted for was unending war. What you really voted for was the end of Social Security and turning it over to private corporations. What you voted for was dirty air. What you voted for was more nuclear power plants. What you voted for was increase in the fuel efficiency standards of automobiles, but instead drilling in the Alaskan National Wildlife Refuge. What you voted for was the end of national forests. What you voted, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. You know, what you voted for was one of the nation's five worst polluters in charge of the Energy Department. You know, what you voted for was the head of the old Cato Institute's Social Security privatization guy in charge of Social Security retirement benefits and so on. And I suspect that in the 2006 elections, particularly if we can get some of these Republican-owned machines out of the way, that there's a good chance that the House and Senate may end up one or the other, and perhaps both, in the hands of the Democratic Party. And if that happens, it will be the end of George W. Bush's career. It'll absolutely be the end, because there just are too many scandals. In fact, there have been at least 35 major scandals during the Bush administration. Thus, our periodic Bush Happens alerts.
£291 billion, Dr. Calculus.
Well, let me see. That would be 145 million and a half tons of the
Bush
refuse.
Yeah, refuse, yes. Per every day, and by the year, let me figure, over 53 million tons of
manure?
Manure, yeah. By comparison, the pyramid of the Pharaoh Cheops weighs about 690 million tons, which means that every four and three, you've got a pile of this
excrement.
Yeah.
Yes, it's our Bush Happens alert. Another one for another day. The Department of Justice's bungled terrorism case. This is from Salon.com, by the way. An article published by Salon.com titled The Scandal Sheet by Peter Dzikis, I believe it's pronounced. The scandal, the Department of Justice completely botched the nation's first post-9/11 terrorism trial, as seen when the convictions of three Detroit men allegedly linked to Al-Qaeda were overturned in September 2004. Former Attorney General John Ashcroft had claimed that their June 2003 sentencing sent a clear message that the government would detect, disrupt, and dismantle the activities of terrorist cells. Only problem was that the Department of Justice's lead prosecutor on the case, Richard Convertino, withheld key information from the defense, distorted supposed pieces of evidence, like a Las Vegas vacation video that he said was a surveillance tape, but that's not the half of it, notes Salon.com. Convertino said he was unfairly scapegoated because he testified before the Senate against Department of Justice wishes about terrorist financing. Justice's reconsideration of the case began soon thereafter. Convertino has since sued his old employer, the Department of Justice, which has also placed him under investigation. Now, let's see. Overturned conviction, lawsuit, feuding about a Kafkaesque case. As Salon.com notes, or as Peter Dzikis notes in this article, nobody looks good here, least of all the wondrous Bush administration. That's a bit of an understatement. Just a wee bit of an understatement. On this day in history, on January 20th, 1981, Iran released 52 American hostages held hostage for 444 days, minutes after the presidency had passed from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan. Barbara Honegger, who was an insider, she, in 1980, Barbara Honegger was part of the Reagan-Bush transition presidential team. In 1981, she worked in the White House Office of Policy Development as a research and policy analyst. Her last employment in Washington was with the Department of Justice. In 1989, wrote a book called October Surprise. The subtitle, Did the Reagan-Bush Election Campaign Sabotage President Carter's Attempts to Free the American Hostages in Iran? The back covers a picture of Barbara Honegger. On one side, Ronald Reagan, on the other, George Bush, shaking hands with the two of them. And in her book,
She just lays this out. She just lays the thing right out. In the introduction, for example, she said this theory that George W. Bush actually went over during the election and said to the Ayatollahs, you guys hang on to those hostages, it'll make Carter look bad and we'll win the election. Because Jimmy Carter was way ahead. Ronald Reagan was broadly thought of as a right-wing crackpot. His own vice president had referred to his economic policies as voodoo economics during the primaries. So Honegger says, it explains the timing of the release of the hostages held in Iran only minutes after Ronald Reagan's inauguration. It explains why the Reagan-Bush administration risked political suicide by shipping arms to the Khomeini regime at all. It explains the timing of the flow of U.S. armaments to Iran, which began not in 1985, but immediately after Mr. Reagan and Mr. Bush gained power in 1981. It explains why these weapons, which are the real smoking guns of the October surprise story, were delivered to the Khomeini regime when there were no U.S. hostages in Iran and fully 3 years before the first American hostage was taken captive in Lebanon. Interesting, eh? October surprise, she says, was the name of the Reagan-Bush campaign, gave to the single event that stood between Ronald Reagan and the White House. That was the possibility of the release of the hostages. So they decided to foil it, she says. It's just a really remarkable story. Today, the anniversary of it, January 20th, 1981, the beginning of the Reagan Revolution, the end of Jimmy Carter's presidency, and the release of 52 American hostages who had been held for 444 days. 10 minutes before the hour on the True People's Radio, Tom Hartman's program.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
With a Workers' Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Union members for bus companies in Queens and Brooklyn have been on strike for more than a week. On Friday, talks between the city and the Amalgamated Transit Union collapsed. leaving no relief in sight for 70,000 daily bus riders. WIN correspondent Sarah Turner reports from New York City.
I have to go all the way to Manhattan to work, so I have to take this bus to the subway.
One local Queens resident expresses the concerns many riders are experiencing as the strike enters its second week. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Sal Baragaglia is president of ATU Local 1181. He says talks center around better health care and benefits. He spoke after negotiations broke down.
Go on until they come back to the table what they promised.
The mayor says the existing bus franchise system is not working and is in negotiations with the bus line owners to buy their companies and transfer them to MTA. Union leaders are angry the mayor won't discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179. Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations are scheduled, and riders, for the time being, will have to find another way to work. For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner in New York City.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the old, stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya. He has no strength to lead. Yes, this you feared. While soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared. Gave them the old, never yet devil speak. Yes, with votes so windled hum.
Yes.
No one could hear the truth above the roar.
And welcome back. Reagan Bush campaign manager William Casey, who, by the way, had been the head of the CIA, wasted no time putting together teams to develop and put into action, actually was later head of the CIA, quote, counter strategies to neutralize an October surprise by President Carter, writes Barbara Honegger. In July 1980, he used the term intelligence operation for the first time to refer to one of these groups in a breakfast meeting with reporters on the second day of the Republican National Convention. Inside the campaign's national headquarters in Arlington, Virginia, however, the intelligence operations were known as the October Surprise Group. Richard Allen estimated that as many as 120 foreign policy and national security advisors worked with the Bush-Reagan campaign. And then where it gets really interesting, the epilogue, A Kindler, Gentler Nation. You know, she lays this whole thing out. All this. President Reagan signed intelligence authorizations in 1984 and 1985, which were considered licenses to kill, according to top government officials. As we have seen, Oliver North and Amiram Nir's U.S.-Israeli covert operations were authorized by a still-secret accord, never revealed to the Congressional Intelligence Committees. And then she goes on through this. Author Seymour Hersh has charged Oliver North with being President Reagan's assassination planner. And then the story of William Casey. He was the guy who put this thing together. The release of the hostages at the moment that Reagan was sworn in on this day in history. CIA director who reportedly attended meetings in Paris, France, in October 19 and 20, 1980, this is during the campaign, with Iranian officials and agents of French intelligence to arrange an arms-for-hostages delay deal with Iran. The morning of his first scheduled under-oath testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the secret Iran initiative, he was struck by seizures in the CIA headquarters office in Langley, Virginia, and underwent, immediately, speech-incapacitating left brain surgery. Shortly thereafter, they cut out his tongue at the brain level. Had he lived to testify, according to lifelong friend and counsel Milton Gould, Casey would have told the entire truth. He would have, and George Herbert Walker Bush might have ended up going to jail. Bill Casey died on May 6th, 1980. 1987. So on this day in history, Iran released the hostages as Ronald Reagan was sworn in. And today, of course, we have the coronation of George W. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Exposing the Con in Conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
And then there were two. A second Walmart in the Canadian province of Quebec has seen a majority of employees signing union cards indicating they wish to be represented by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The St. Hyacinthe store joins a store in Jonquière, Quebec, as the only two unionized Walmarts in the world. Under a ruling by the Quebec Labor Relations Board, both stores were automatically certified because a majority of employees wanted representation. Walmart representatives called the ruling undemocratic because a secret ballot wasn't required and employees may have been intimidated into signing.
The Service Employees International Union is fighting efforts by the state of Wisconsin to create tax credits for individual health insurance savings accounts. SEIU Wisconsin Political Director Robert Craig says the union opposes them because they'll seriously undermine good employer-provided health insurance for workers.
What they're designed to do is to completely change the health insurance landscape in this country. In order to have the account be tax-deductible, it has to be connected to a insurance plan, either a family plan or an individual plan with a high deductible, $1,000 to $2,000. And so your employer would have to provide that, and therefore it literally encourages the creation of very high deductible health insurance plan.
Congress has already created federal tax credits for these health savings accounts, and now a seemingly organized campaign by conservatives is underway to do the same at the state level.
I think what they really are is they're an attempt to roll back the post-World War II compact that a good job included employer-based health insurance.
Craig says real health care reform that addresses the high costs and provides universal coverage for workers is what's really needed.
The city of Denver has seen union membership jump by 50% over the last year. Much of the increase has been attributed to the Teamsters, who launched a massive organizing campaign of non-uniformed municipal employees in 2004. The increase could give the city's unions the leverage they need to put collective bargaining on Denver's ballot. Non-uniformed workers are also represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, as well as the Colorado Federation of Public Employees. The unions say that collective bargaining will give employees more say in their fate when it comes to benefits and pay. Critics say it will constrain the ability of the city to balance the budget by taking power away from policymakers.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. Fairjobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency temp and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. Fairjobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
In the wild and woolly world of unbridled commerce, you'll often encounter disgusting life forms that can only be described as sleaze. For example, take the roving band of companies that profit by essentially bilking vulnerable military veterans of their pensions. These financial corporations appeal to vets who face some personal crisis and need quick cash. No problemo, say the financial agents. Just sign over your military pension payments to us for a while, and we'll advance you some cash. Only later do these desperate veterans realize that they've been robbed. To get, say, $20,000, they give up $60,000 or more in monthly pension payments, amounting to as high as 75% interest. These schemes are illegal, for the law says that future military pensions cannot be signed away by a retiree. Incredibly, though, the Pentagon sides not with our soldiers, but with the profiteering companies that prey on them, even handling the paperwork to divert the retirees' pay to the corporation. Pentagon officials twist the language of the law, declaring that these are not assignments of retiree pay, which would be illegal, but merely the, quote, collateral for loans taken by retirees. The companies twist the language further, denying that these are even loans. Rather, they say that these deals are straightforward commercial transactions. We are just purchasing a stream of payments, one lawyer said coldly. Even colder, whenever veterans balk at paying the usurious ripoff, company lawyers sue them, usually in courts far away from where the vets live. Financially strapped retirees cannot afford to challenge these companies, so they are losing the cases by default and often having to file for personal bankruptcy. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's bankrupt here is a system that's robbing veterans. Where's Bush? Where's Rumsfeld? Where's Congress? To help battle this outrage, call the National Consumer Law Center, 202-452-6252.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. On Monday, we go live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, by the way. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, live 365, cable radio network in 29 states. Welcome back. Glad to have you with us. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website, if you'd like to drop into our chat room. Folks in the chat room keeping me up to date on what's going on with the inaugural. DC.IndyMedia.org has a series of running transcripts of police reports here. Interesting. One is one person down hit by pepper spray. This at 1:10 p.m., maybe physical force. Down, it go on and on. There was one that caught my eye. I thought it was particularly interesting. During Bush's speech, Code Pink held up banners, bring the troops home, and shouted. Police immediately took them away. After that, another group shouted, they were taken away. It went on. Then there was this one. A person dressed like a congressman was hauled off. How do you dress like a congressman? Shelley Drobny,
is a good friend of mine and sometimes knows how to dress like a congressman, don't you, Shelley? It's just a suit and tie, isn't it?
Well, occasionally I rent the suit so that I can look like an important person.
There you go. Glad to have you with us. Sheldon Drobny is the chairman of Paradigm Group, LLC. ParadigmVenture.com is the website, an investment firm in Chicago, Illinois. He co-founded the concept for Air America Radio with his wife, Anita, who is an extraordinary human being. He's a businessman, a philanthropist, a writer, contributed articles to MakeThemAccountable.com, where you find his writings from time to time and with some regularity. And has started a new organization called the Fourth Estate Society, which I think is kind of cool. And Shelley has a book out called The Road to Air America. And realizing I'm not on Air America right now. In fact, I compete with Air America. So there's
that's okay. Lively competition.
There you go. In fact, I think it's a good thing. And I have to say, I think that Air America has just done a truly wonderful thing by kicking the door open, basically, by showing that business model, which I had suggested a couple of years ago, was viable, is real. And in fact, the book I have here, you cited this as, what can I say? It's all in the book. And it is. And thank you for your kind mentions of me in the book, in fact.
Well, I can attribute almost half the content to you. So, you know, I have your very important article called Talking Back to Talk Radio that was written over 2 years ago. Of course, we had many, many conversations, and you were there from the beginning. And it was not my choice about programming. I want you to know that. If I had no control over programming,
that's quite
one thing I was able to get was a franchise player, Al Franken, because that's very important when you're starting a new concept in a new market. So, we did all we could. And Tom, I got to tell you something. You were terrific, and you still are.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Shelley. I was very pleased to play the role that I played, as small as it was, in helping you and Anita get started and Shell Media, which ultimately became
Air America Radio.
Yeah. And
right. Well, that story in itself is a wonderful story about entrepreneurship and reorganization and political shenanigans. And
yeah.
Whatever.
Well, you know, there's really, in my mind, there's three parts to your book, Road to Air America. And I want to actually promote this. Very often I have authors on. Actually, we don't do very many interviews on this program. It's fairly rare. But occasionally I have an author on because they have something important to say. And I think you do. And I want to also talk about the Fourth Estate Society in this regard. But occasionally there's a book that I think is just a fine book, a really good book people ought to check out. And Road to Air America is one of those really good, really well-done books. And there's three reasons why I really appreciate this book. One, it's got your story in it. And you start out talking about your family and your father and the lessons that you learned and what he learned going through the Depression and just, you know, and looking back on everything from the worldwide situation, you know, the Holocaust and World War II and everything, to progressive politics in America, the evolution, Roosevelt and all this. You get into Henry Wallace. I mean, who is the vice president under Roosevelt, who preceded Harry Truman, who was Roosevelt's fourth vice president. And Henry Wallace's rants about fascism, which I've quoted many times on this program. In fact, you were the person who first turned me on to Henry Wallace. And
right.
I then, you know, wrote about him on Common Dreams and other places.
Well, I remember hearing that discussion with you, and I do have a piece from him in the book. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's great, and also then there's the third part. So there's your story, there's the story of kind of progressive politics in America, and then there's this fascinating business story about how a business comes into being. And I found all of them. It's a multidimensional book and a small book, which is nice too. People just don't have the time to read 5,000-page books, you know, or 500-page books anymore.
Well, it was about 70 pages longer until it was vetted by lawyers, because I was
they will do that to you.
I was going to PO the entire country, so they figured they wanted it to be a bestseller. But you know, I'll tell you, I'm about 80,000 on the Amazon bestseller list, so
that's
I'm
great.
Getting up there.
Yeah, you're doing good. You're doing good, Shelley. it's a good book. Tell us about first of all, before we get into the Fourth Estate of Society, because we've only got 7 minutes here in this to go in this segment, and I want to get all of this in. What is your take? Now, you're on the outside. I know you're still a stockholder in Air America, but you're not running the company or anything. What is your take on, not specifically talking about Air America Radio, but about the future of progressive talk radio in America? Do you think that we're going to see progressive? How long do you think it's going to be before there are as many progressive voices out there as there are right-wing voices right now?
Well, I think I mentioned this not in the book, but in other interviews, that the Telecommunications Act worked against us in terms of getting these big companies to put our programming on the air. But now it's working in our favor because they have all these underperforming stations, as you mentioned in your article, and they see that it works. It brings on an audience. It's a very large audience. And they're public companies, and they're, you know, they have a fiduciary responsibility to stockholders. So the profit motive does help. And I think, how long will it last? You know, I think from the standpoint of profit motive and what companies are looking for, it'll last as long as the ratings and the arbitrons are high.
Yeah.
So that's the way I feel.
And in that regard, then, I've heard some pretty, not speaking of Air America Radio, there's a lot of liberal programming out there in addition to Air America Radio, so I want to make it clear I'm not knocking that network, although I'm not knocking that network. I've heard some pretty bad liberal talk radio programming. There's some pretty good stuff out there, too. I think that Randy Rhodes and Mike Malloy, for example, absolutely are extraordinary. But there's also some pretty, you know, makes me cringe stuff out there. And do you see a shakeout coming? Do you think that it's possible that if there's enough, you know, boring programming, pedantic programming, just basically interview programming, that it could actually kill liberal talk radio?
No, you know, I don't think, liberal talk radio would be killed by the bad apples that, you know, have shows that are, you know, not what we thought they should be. I think it'll all settle into what the audience wants and what they're interested in. I really think hard-hitting and, you know, types of, you know, talk show hosts like yourself and Randy Rhodes and Mike Malloy are what people are looking for. They're looking for people to get them, you know, their juices going, because otherwise, you know, you kind of sit there and think you're all alone in the world. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And then
I think it'll naturally come to everybody will have their own style and everybody's got something to contribute. And, you know, and the public will tell us that, I think.
Yeah, and they are, actually. I mean, you know, we're seeing this. The ratings are coming out now. We're finding out what shows work, what shows don't, who works in what markets.
Well, we're finding that out, too, in Air America. I mean, we're finding out, you know, what shows are doing well, what shows are not doing well, what audiences we're attracting. And so the advertisers can know, you know, from their point of view, what it's worth to them. And, you know, that's all part of running a business, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the bottom line, ultimately, is that it's a business. I got to say, it's a wonderful thing to be able to make a living doing something that you really care about and changing the world in a positive way. I am so grateful for this program that I have, and for the fact that we have sponsors who sponsor us and who are actually getting results from their sponsorship. And we have radio stations that are carrying us, and we're picking up new ones all the time. And they're getting results, and they're carrying us because they like the program. Tell us about the Fourth Estate Society, shall we?
Yeah, one more point I wanted to make.
Sure.
Rush Limbaugh was number one in New York, a highly liberal city for a long time, and he probably still is.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a majority to reach the red states. We can, with lots of talk radio in red counties, red states, whatever. If we have a little more time, we'll be able to get the message out. Now, as far as the Fourth Estate Society is concerned, you and I both agree that the status of journalism in this country is non-existent.
It's tragic.
It's tragic. It's sort of like I think one step below Pravda, in the sense that it's lockstep with the government. I don't think it's a secret to a lot of people. And good journalists, especially investigative journalists, are blackballed. They can't get a job. They can't get funded. They can't support their families. And our Fourth Estate is going to hire 10 to 12 top-flight journalists, funded with salaries and with the ability to not be accountable to larger corporate interests, so they can really follow the story and keep it going. And now that we have an echo chamber, which is Air America and all the other liberal talk radios, we're going to shame the major networks by getting these stories out, and it's going to be over and over again, just like Rush Limbaugh did.
So the Bob Petrakis's, right? So the Bob Petrakis's or Petrakis's and the Greg Palast's of the world will have something behind them to be getting out.
Yeah, they
there.
Can make a living, and they don't. And journalists really want to make a living, and they want to do their job. And Bob Perry is one of the founders of Fourth Estate Society. You know, he broke Iran-Contra and never worked again, so to speak.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I've done some work in Russia and been there a number of times. In fact, Pravda has actually written two articles about me. I have one hanging on the wall right next to me. And the two newspapers, when it was the Soviet Union, used to be Pravda and Izvestia. Yeah. And, Pravda means truth.
And Izvestia means, I've lost it now.
I don't really know, but, in Russia, they use truth in an Orwellian way. I'm talking about the old Soviet Union. You know?
Oh, I'm sorry. Izvestia means news. Pravda means truth. And the old joke in Russia was there's no Pravda in Izvestia and there's no Izvestia in Pravda.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I like
and
that.
But that's what we have now. I mean, the John Stewart had this investigative reporter on The Daily Show a couple nights ago who had broken the story about the Homeland Security, where they went down and they actually videotaped Tom Ridge sitting, in the pool, and they were spending our Homeland Security dollars having a party. And they did. First of all, they didn't catch these guys videotaping them, and the videotape machine could have just as easily have been a machine gun, secondly, they were wasting our money. And I'm wondering, how long is this guy going to survive at ABC News? Because this is just a rare thing.
Yeah, it is. But I'll tell you, we are really making traction on the Fourth State Society because we have a milestone event that people recognize now. So when we go out there, Anita and Shelley Drobny are not the no-name people they were before. You know how much trouble we had raising money.
Yeah.
And now they're recognizing that, there's a lot of liberal talk. Primarily because of our idea, and so they're willing to support this not-for-profit organization.
That's great.
And we need a lot of support because, if we don't have the Fourth Estate, I think this is the last vestige of democracy in this country.
There you go. Is there a website for it, Shelley, for the Fourth Estate Society?
Yes, it's fourthestatesociety.org.
Fourthestatesociety.org. Great.
Sheldon. My website at sdrobny at paradigmventure.com is my email address. So if I screwed up on that website, people can reach me.
Well, and we'll get it straight on our message board. Shelley Drobny, thanks so much for being with us. The Road to Air America.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242-8272. This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yes, the billionaires for Bush are celebrating.
We expect things in return, and we get what we want when we pay. Sing hey, 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 buy a candidate today.
And welcome back, my friends. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. What an amazing day. It's Coronation Day in America. Ellen and Ratner is with us from the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C.
Bottom line. You'll take care of it? How much should I make this out for?
Yeah.
Say hello to your pappy.
There we go. The billionaires for Bush. It's just remarkable. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. You didn't have to freeze your little tail off listening to this guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In other words, you did.
I did. And
you didn't get one of the VIP seats with the heaters, did you? They had heaters up front, you know.
I know. I was in the rafters and with all my my brethren and sistern, but we got a good view. I probably was 150 feet away from the guy.
Mm-hmm. And what's now? I haven't heard the speech. I've been on the air through this whole thing.
You haven't heard the speech. Well,
what do you have to say?
Basically, the speech has it's all about, you know, as Americans, we're going to bring democracy to the rest of the world.
Even if they don't want it, damn it.
And that's right. And he talked about the fact that we're going to be neither masters nor slaves. I mean, it was this. A lot of invoking God. Person who gave the closing benediction, whose speech was almost as long as the president's, not exactly, but whatever, he essentially also invoked Jesus Christ. But not Reverend Moon.
Well, that's surprising, since Moon has been so largely responsible for the rise of the Bush family and the Bush family fortunes. I mean, you know, without the Washington Times, where would they be?
Well, I actually think that Bush's tentacles are so great into the religious right. This morning, we did a radio row, which I wish you would have been to, but there was a congressman from Texas who we had on. We got into discussion, and basically says he's a Baptist, and, you know, if you do not believe in Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, then you're going to go to hell. So I'm sure a lot of his constituents that he represents are going to go to hell.
Well, you know, that's a matter of personal belief, and people are entitled to their beliefs or their not beliefs. But the problem that I have is not so much politicians using religious rhetoric. It is politicians handing money to churches. I don't know if you saw this article. It was in the Los Angeles Times Sunday Magazine, I believe, about all these black churches across the United States in this last election whose pastors are coming out in favor of Bush and whose photographs are being prominently displayed in black communities, and turns out that over $1 billion under the faith-based initiative programs has been handed off during the year 2003. We don't have the 2004 figures yet. Was handed off over $1 billion from the government directly to churches in battleground states, and all of a sudden these churches were, and in these states where, you know, Bush got like 6% of the vote. 4 years ago. Now he's getting 16%.
It was a cover for fundraising. That's all it was.
It is. I mean, it's ongoing. It's an ongoing thing. I mean, it's
exactly, Tom.
It's mind-boggling.
There was one protester today during the group who was yelling. He was in sort of the red section, and he was taken out. But I don't know. He managed to get a ticket, and he starts screaming at the end of his speech. It was quite something. I've been to four inaugurations. I've never heard that. But, of course, there's that counter-inaugural going on at the same time. And, you know, what can I say? I mean, he gave this speech that you should really analyze it, and I'm sure with your interest in language and what it means. I'm on the train now. I got out of Dodge. So if you hear something in the background, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But if you look at the speech with a lot of his invocations, he invokes Lincoln in it. It's really, he basically says, the greatest objective of ending tyranny is the concentrated work of generations. And then he goes on and says that his duty is to protect the nations and his people.
A lot of flowery language there. Ellen, we're out of time.
A lot of flowery language.
Yeah, we'll be revisiting it as time goes on. Thanks so much for calling in and for sharing
with
us today. And for standing out in the cold on our behalf.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
And then there were two. A second Walmart in the Canadian province of Quebec has seen a majority of employees signing union cards indicating they wish to be represented by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The Saint-Hyacinthe store joins a store in Jean-Pierre, Quebec, as the only two unionized Walmarts in the world. Under a ruling by the Quebec Labor Relations Board, both stores were automatically certified because a majority of employees wanted representation. Walmart representatives called the ruling undemocratic because a secret ballot wasn't required and employees may have been intimidated into signing.
The Service Employees International Union is fighting efforts by the state of Wisconsin to create tax credits for individual health insurance savings accounts. SEIU Wisconsin political director Robert Craig says the union opposes them because they'll seriously undermine good employer-provided health insurance for workers.
What they're designed to do is to completely change the health insurance landscape in this country. In order to have the account be tax-deductible, it has to be connected to a insurance plan, either a family plan or an individual plan with a high deductible, $1,000 to $2,000. And so your employer would have to provide that, and therefore it literally encourages the creation of very high-deductible health insurance plan.
Congress has already created federal tax credits for these health savings accounts, and now a seemingly organized campaign by conservatives is underway to do the same at the state level.
I think what they really are is they're an attempt to roll back the post-World War II compact that a good job included employer-based health insurance.
Craig says real health care reform that addresses the high costs and provides universal coverage for workers is what's really needed.
The city of Denver has seen union membership jump by 50% over the last year. Much of the increase has been attributed to the Teamsters, who launched a massive organizing campaign of non-uniformed municipal employees in 2004. The increase could give the city's unions the leverage they need to put collective bargaining on Denver's ballot. Non-uniformed workers are also represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, as well as the Colorado Federation of Public Employees. The unions say that collective bargaining will give employees more say in their fate when it comes to benefits and pay. Critics say it will constrain the ability of the city to balance the budget by taking power away from policymakers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Fairjobs.org says over half the jobs that were created during the first Bush administration were agency temp and contingency jobs. The group says wages were stagnant for all sectors of the workforce. At least 5 million workers lost their health insurance and outsourcing of jobs accelerated. Fairjobs.org says efforts are underway to organize contingent workers, but many obstacles, including a Bush labor ruling that requires permission of temp agencies before workers can organize, stand in the way.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We say we build democracy, but really build refineries and drill for our prosperity from oil in the ground. The earth just might be warming from the oil that we burn, but I'm a simple man and that's too difficult to learn. Forget about renewables like solar energy, 'cause oil made my pappy rich, it's good enough for me.
And welcome back. It began in 1997, writes Robert O'Hara Jr., in an article titled, "In Age of Security, Firm Minds Wealth of Personal Data." This is a pretty remarkable story out of the Washington Post. It began in 1997 as a company that sold credit data to the insurance industry, but over the next 7 years it had acquired dozens of other companies. Alpharetta-based Georgia-based ChoicePoint, Inc. became the all-purpose commercial source. What they're basically talking about is ChoicePoint, this little company in this northern suburb of Atlanta, has grown from over 1,000 clients to over 50,000 clients. Its stock has gone in value from $500 million to $4.1 billion. And now it is becoming the spy agency for the government in some regards, at least some suggest. And why then, you say? Well, in fact, here, the vice president of the company, James A. Zimbardi, says, "We do act as an intelligence agency, gathering data, applying analytics." Okay. Very, very straightforward. Now, here's the hook. There are laws that go back to the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment is where the founders chose to put privacy in the Constitution, although the word privacy was not used in the late 1700s because it was a euphemism for going to the bathroom. Thus, privies, those of you who are old enough to remember privies, maybe you'd have to be really old, I don't know. But a privy is the old word for, usually for an outhouse, actually. And then when they came indoors, they became bathrooms. And in England, they're still not called bathrooms. Many parts of the world, you ask to use the bathroom, and they'll point you to the room that has the bathtub in it, and that's all it has in it. And that can be a disconcerting experience. But nonetheless, the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, keep in mind, the whole idea of the Constitution, and this was really laid out clearly in the first 10 amendments, the whole idea of the Constitution is to limit the power of government. The idea of the Constitution, very straightforward, put forth in the preamble, we the people of the United States, in order to create this country, right? In order to, actually, there were seven specific things that they laid out. In order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Now, I don't see anywhere in there anything about making other countries democratic, do you? Do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America. So, anyway, we the people formed this thing. The Constitution, in fact, goes so far as to say that only Congress can declare war, but that's a whole other rant. But in any case, the Fourth Amendment laid out our privacy rights, basically saying that the government has no damn business snooping in your house or mine, and in fact cannot do so without the order of a court. And that court can't issue such an order unless somebody swears on oath, under threat of being prosecuted, if it turns out that they lied, that there is probable cause, that is, that they have some evidence that you have committed a crime worthy of investigating. This is, pretty straightforward stuff. And frankly, in my opinion, there are a number of things that are being done right now that are unconstitutional violations of this. And there's funny ways that people get around it. For example, employers doing random drug tests. You know, I think that that's an unconstitutional violation of privacy. The problem is that the courts have said over the years that if you go to work for somebody, when you're on their property, you're on private property, and you have to operate by their rules. And if they decide that as a condition of employment, you've got to pee in a bottle, then that's it. And, okay, I guess I would have to give them that it is possible for people to enter into private contracts that the government can't prevent, because, again, that would be the government exercising power to prevent that. But what about government employees? So government employees are on our property, and they're working for us. Well, can we set up employment contracts with the... See, these are kind of gray areas. Another one is randomly stopping people on public streets to see if they're drunk, or to see if they have their insurance, or to see if their seatbelt is fastened, or whatever. And frankly, I think that our government has been overreaching in a lot of these areas over the last two or three decades. It's interesting to go back and read, and I've been rereading some of the Nero Wolfe novels by Rex Stout. It's just good, dumb, fun reading, you know, the kind of stuff you read when you're on an airplane or taking a bath or something. Most of these were written he started writing them in the late 30s, and they were written throughout the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s. And there were a couple in the 70s before he died. I think he died in 76 or 78. But the ones that were written in the 40s and 50s is fascinating because the police inspector shows up, you know, and they've got the witness hidden upstairs, right? And the police inspector shows up, and Archie Goodwin goes to the door, "You can't come in. You don't have a warrant." And the police inspector just mutters under his breath and walks off. And now, I mean, you look at cops on TV, right? "We don't have a warrant. What? What are you talking about? Get the SWAT team out here. Where's that battering ram? You know, kick in that door." And it's like, you know, it's things have changed. Shall we say, we have become more and more of a police state. But we still have these protections in place, at least in theory, in principle. And truth be told, we still do have many protections against the government acquiring more power and more information about us and more power over our lives. And there are some things that it is illegal for the government to do. It is, you know, it's at a certain level, if the government doesn't have some evidence that we have committed a crime, they don't have, according to many constitutional scholars, they don't have a legal right to snoop on us. However, there is no law against somebody else snooping on us. I mean, there's a law that says that you can't peep into somebody else's window, but it's really more to stop, like, sexual predator kind of thing, because there's no law that says that you can't watch out your front window and make notes about when your neighbor leaves their house and when they come back. You can do that all day long. So you can gather information on your neighbor. You just can't do it for purian interests, I guess. And so here we have the situation where a private company, because it can do things that the government can't do in the realm of invading our privacy, is doing it and then providing the government with that information as a subcontractor or as a contractor so that the government can say, "Well, we didn't do it. We're perfectly legal. What we're doing is legal." Do you get this? We have legal constraints. In fact, here, this is the, I will quote from the Washington Post. Choice Point and other private companies increasingly occupy a special place in Homeland Security and crime-fighting efforts, in part because they can compile information and use it in ways government officials sometimes cannot because of privacy and information laws. Now, does that not put a chill down your spine? The government entering into an unholy alliance with corporations to invade our privacy, to get around privacy laws. Chris Hufnagel, the associate director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, a nonprofit group in Washington, D.C., says ChoicePoint is helping to create a, quote, scarlet letter society, end quote, These critics say it will soon be hard for individuals looking for work or access to sensitive facilities to ever shake off a criminal past or small transgression, such as a bounced check or a minor arrest. An entire industry has mushroomed during the past decade because of extraordinary increases in computing power. This I'm quoting now from the Washington Post, this article by Robert O'Hara Jr. Because of increases in computing power, the expansion of telecommunications networks, and the ability of companies like ChoicePoint to gather and make sense of public records, criminal histories, and other electronic details that people now routinely leave behind. They're not alone in eyeing the government for new business. Now, this is going to really get you. LexisNexis is another company that's getting into this stuff, and they just paid $775 million last year to acquire Sisint, Inc., a rival company with a supercomputer and a counterterror system dubbed Matrix. Yes, folks, the Matrix is real. And it's owned by LexisNexis. ChoicePoint, though, has distinguished itself through 58 acquisitions in recent years. What happened to the Sherman Antitrust Act? We have these giant, giant corporations. 2 weeks ago, ChoicePoint also completed the acquisition of 12 Limited, a British technology firm with a subsidiary in Springfield, Mass. 12 Inc. that creates computer software to help investigators and intelligence analysts in the United States and scores of other countries find links among people, their associates, and their activities. They have not only done this, they're also hiring former spooks, ChoicePoint, to expand its presence in the intelligence community. They've hired William P. Crowell Jr., former deputy director of National Security Agency. Now the NSA, I'm telling you, the NSA, they're much larger than the CIA. Up until about a decade ago, it was an official secret that they even existed. Their buildings didn't have signs on them. Their people's business cards did not have an agency name on them. So they hired the former deputy director of the NSA. They hired Dale Watson, former FBI assistant executive assistant director of counterterrorism and counterintelligence. And get this. What's your reward if you write the Patriot Act? You get hired by one of these great big corporations for no doubt a very healthy sum. Viet D. Dinh, a former assistant attorney general and primary author of the USA Patriot Act, now works for ChoicePoint. Pasquale De Amuro, an assistant director at the FBI and head of its New York office, has expressed qualms about this. He says there are all kinds of oversight and restrictions to the federal government, to Big Brother, going out there and collecting this type of information. He said, yet there are no restrictions in the private sector to individuals collecting information across this country, which potentially could be a problem for the citizens of this country. Now, stepping off from that, for those of you who use the computer, and hello to the folks in the chat room, this note from Magic City Morning Star Tech Notes. Can the FBI monitor your web browsing without a warrant? Dateline Washington, D.C. Today, the Electronic Freedom Frontier Foundation, I'm assuming this is a press release, filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the FBI and other offices of the U.S. Department of Justice seeking the release of documents that would reveal whether the government has been using the USA Patriot Act to spy on Internet users' reading habits without a search warrant. You will recall the Patriot Act allows them to snoop on you without a warrant. In other words, it allows them to violate the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. At issue is Patriot Section 216, which expanded the government's authority to conduct surveillance and criminal investigations using pen registers or trap and trace devices, sometimes known as pen traps. Pen traps collect information about the numbers dialed on a telephone, but don't record the actual content of phone conversations. Because of this limitation, court orders authorizing pen trap surveillance are easy to get. Instead of having to show probable cause, the government need only certify relevance to its investigation, because they're actually not listening in on the conversation. So we've got this precedent set that it's fairly easy to get the kind of tap on somebody's phone where you know everybody they've called. You have no idea what they said because you're not listening in, but you're keeping track of who they called. And the government hasn't considered this quite as bad an invasion of privacy. It's sort of like noticing who the mail, you know, who's like in the post office has the ability. I'm not sure if they have a legal ability or not. They have the physical ability to look at the outside of the mail coming into my house. And I'm sure my mailman knows who I'm getting mail from. In fact, my mailman has become a friend of ours over the years. His name is Dick. He's a great guy. Just had his hip replaced last year, and he's, keeping on, keeping on. He's just an extraordinary guy. Walking out there in the cold and the snow and 9 degrees below zero yesterday, Dick came by and delivered the mail. So, you know, Dick probably has a pretty good idea who's delivering the mail, but he can't open the envelopes. Nor do I think Dick would want to, but, you know, the post office can. So anyhow, they say, we've got this precedent set of being able to look at an address without having to get a proof of crime warrant. So the question now is, are they doing the same thing? And they're saying, okay, we want to be able to do these pen trap things. We want to know the address of the web pages that people are looking at. Now, if you know the address, that is the URL of a web page, that's a little different than knowing a phone number, because you now know the content of that web page. All you have to do is look at it. And big question here, the Electronic Freedom Foundation trying to find out, are they using this thing to track people's web usage? Further news follows. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxin Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
They gave up the old Bible Belt ballyhoo. You bamboozled them. Forget your AWOL and your DUI. You gave them a show that always pleases. Your friends claimed you were endorsed by Jesus. You razzle-dazzled them, razzle-dazzled them, razzle-dazzled them. And make sane people cry.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Well, it's getting close to the end of the show here. First of all, an update from what's going on in Washington, D.C., we're watching the dcindymedia.org site along with our chat room. And the chat room folks, in fact, first turned me onto this and been following this. 2:33 p.m., flags being burned at 14th in Pennsylvania. Why? You know, I agree with the conservatives on the Supreme Court that we don't want to get into censoring free speech and that it's, you know, this is technically a form of free speech. But I think it's a dumb thing to do. It is just a dumb thing to do. It hanging them upside down. This is a time of crisis. That makes sense to me. You know, hanging your flag upside down outside your house. That's what you do to say crisis, or putting your flag at half staff to mourn the soldiers who have died in Iraq as a consequence of George Bush's reelection stunt. But I'm sorry. I think it's bad strategy. It's bad politics. It's bad. Anyhow, some protesters report there's been a fight of some sort between anarchists burning a flag and a Bush supporter trying to take the flag from them. 1:50 p.m., possible splinter group heading from DN7 to Capitol area. Riot police lining the streets. Maybe 1,000 anti-Bush protesters. 1:45 p.m., police car counter nautical spaces left. What appears to be a plainclothes cop is still out in front. So on it goes. There's quite a few protests going on. Probably you won't see much about them on the evening news. Anyhow, here's the deal with the Patriot Act. The Department of Justice has said openly that their new definitions allow pen traps, that is the classic type of warrants, search warrants that were used to get just the telephone number that's being dialed, but not to record the call. that allow pen traps to collect email and IP addresses. So email, now, how do you collect an IP? They won't reveal whether URLs are included in this. In other words, the actual individual web page you went to. Why would they not reveal this when this year we're going to have to, there's going to be a discussion about renewing the Patriot Act? Why wouldn't they just be upfront about it? This is not good, my friends. This is not good for a democracy in America.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you